Okay, thanks. Let me just make a couple of points on funding and then on liquidity, the latter of which we haven't covered too much yet. So, and most of it just reiterates stuff I've said over the last few months elsewhere. In terms of funding, I suppose the point I'd make there, and it's true for both the Australian banks and banks globally, except possibly the French banks that Rob was talking about earlier, but the changes in funding structure that you've seen in banking systems around the world, I think, has been as much driven by the markets, by internal considerations, and by the rating agencies as it has been by the regulatory framework. Now, they're all been pushing in the same direction, and the regulation's taking you to roughly the same place that the other forces have taken you. So the important point to make is that as some of those other forces back off, and some of them almost certainly will sometime in the future, the regulation's aim is to preserve the sort of structure that we've got today, or something like that, in the future, rather than go back to where we were in 2007. But I said, rather than saying that regulation has driven the changes in funding, I think it's that, along with a number of other forces all pushing in the same direction of it, resulted in where we are today. On the liquidity side of things, I suppose a point to make, and I think it reflects a paper which was given earlier at this conference, yes, maturity transformation is going to become more costly. That's the point. It was arguably underpriced before 2007. Whether it's moved to the correct pricing now, yes, that's debatable. But is it more expensive? Yes, it is. But the argument that I suppose we would make as regulators is that's a small cost worth paying for the increased resilience of the system in the future. And I suppose that point is generally true of all the regulation. Is it costly? Yes, it is. But the argument is that the costs, I think, are actually fairly small, certainly in terms of liquidity, I think they're fairly small. And the benefits in terms of a more resilient financial situation in the future are certainly worth paying for. Just in terms of something on the local situation, given we're about to move or in the process of moving into the new liquidity world over the next few months, I don't see them as actually having a material effect on balance sheet growth now, particularly because there isn't actually much balance sheet growth around. But nor do I think it actually having a material effect on the future. I think most of the issue is really one in terms of price. The liquidity regulations aren't fully priced into all the products at the moment. That's got to change sometime over the next couple of years. When exactly remains to be seen. But again, this is true both here and elsewhere around the world. But I think that you can think of the liquidity side of things as primarily one of price, not one of quantity. I don't see it having any material impact on sort of balance sheet growth, either in the near term or actually in the medium term. So let me just finish there by way of introduction.
It's Sue Lennon from the PM program on ABC Radio. This question is for Guy Debelle and Kurt. Just referring to Robert's comments about Japanese banks, in the event of a blow-up in Japanese banks, what would be the effect on Australian banks, just given that we've seen in recent times Japanese banks trying to reposition themselves to lend to Australian banks?
The Japanese don't have that much presence here. I mean, they may have been looking around for opportunities, but the direct presence in Australia is actually pretty small. They're a reasonable player in some of the syndicated loans, and they've stepped up over the last couple of years of as European banks have pulled out. But all up, that's actually a pretty small amount of involvement in the Australian economy, I suppose. I mean, the only thing, I looked at Robert's chart, which showed that, I don't know, it was about 10% of GDP that the Japanese banks needed in terms of extra capital. And the debt stock's 250% of GDP, so another 10% actually, if you look at it that way, isn't all that much, particularly when you can, you know, as much as you say there might be some concerns around Japan, they're still funding themselves at 80 basis points for 10 years. So my guess, you can make it on your argument, I think what you were saying is, if you get this capital, the government should actually be able to get a reasonable return. My guess is probably more than 80 basis points over 10 years. So, you know, it's not necessarily such an impossible proposition that you're putting there.
Just the last question, maybe to Kurt and Guy. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen in 2013. There have been some discussion about Lehman Brothers case in 2008 when European banks pulled out of Asia. How do you see the whole process of liquidity risk if we face a worse scenario in Europe, and then the implications obviously on wholesale funding. We know that Asian banks also experience similar to Australian banks when it comes to wholesale funding. How do you see the whole thing in the context of regional stability?
I think the system was actually reasonably resilient in 2008, but it's a lot more resilient now. And if you think about the extreme stress that 2008 came brought, which was basically a shutdown of all markets, well, you know, that's about as extreme as you get. And actually, probably from a funding point of view, at least, is outside any reasonable stress scenario that you would actually would have contemplated. But if you look forward, I think the banks have got themselves in a much more stable funding position in the liquidity, particularly on both wholesale funding and on liquidity. I mean, one thing which partly comes to a comment Kurt made earlier, if you think about the sources of funding available, if I'm out there with funding myself at 5 years in the wholesale market, so you increase the term of that, that's actually a much longer average term of funding than the average term of funding of a deposit, which at least contractually is about 5 months, and behaviourally is about 2.5 years. So, and partly comes to the point of the rating agencies about thinking about what forms of funding are actually more or less resilient. I suppose the only other comment I'd make, which is that, one which sort of became evident through 2009 and particularly in 2010, is that, so if investors are holding various financial instruments and that matures, so if I'm holding European bank paper and that matures and I'm a bank investor, I have to put my money somewhere. So and the question is, where am I going to put the money? And one thing you've seen over the last few years is banks which are perceived to be relatively stronger have had more than their fair share of that funding, and to the point that the Australian banks have often sort of decline some of those offers. So, again, if you look forward and if you think there's going to be a stress in Europe, depending on the nature of the stress and how dislocative that is, in some states of the world that's going to be bad for everyone, in other states of the world that's going to be bad for Europe, but not necessarily such a bad event for financial systems elsewhere, which partly comes to Robert's issue about the correlation. And also about the fact that the correlation varies through time, depending on the state of the world that you're in.
Guy, Chris Lozu from Colonial First State. You mentioned OTC, derivatives trading, and the central clearing of that as a financial stability measure. But is there concerns around the liquidity drain that will create, particularly in a stressed market environment, and with that liquidity being held in offshore clearinghouses?
Yep, that's very much a consideration. So, I mean, I wouldn't put so much as liquidity as collateral call. And you see wide-ranging estimates of how much collateral is going to be tied up as a result of central clearing, primarily a few other regulations as well. And the numbers, the range in estimates is just vast. Now, and partly that's because we're not entirely sure of the landscape we're actually going to be in, which is partly why a few months ago the Council of Financial Regulators put out a paper saying we basically haven't made up our mind where exactly we're going on, because it's very much dependent on the global landscape, which itself is incredibly uncertain. But one of the considerations is exactly what you talked about, is the extent to which collateral is tied up in other jurisdictions. The interesting thing about central clearing is, I think, conceptually, if you had one global clearer, then you can make a reasonable case that things are better. As soon as you move away from that and you're starting to fragment clearing across many jurisdictions, then the landscape becomes a hell of a lot more complicated. And we're still but that landscape is still very much up in the air at the moment. And hopefully, coming to Farrah's question about things over 2013, there will be a little more clarity around that issue over the next 12 years, but in a way which it's difficult to exactly envisage how it's going to play out at the moment.